In the decades following World War II, the United States experienced a boom in automobile sales, and with it came an increased demand for gasoline with the additive tetraethyl lead. More recently, we've become aware of the health issues that come from exposure to lead, whether it's in paint or gas emissions, but no one seemed to ask whether children exposed to a molecule in tetraethyl would be far more likely to commit acts of violence later in life. In an article for the current issue of Mother Jones magazine, Kevin Drum, a political blogger and columnist, explores this theory and the extensive evidence that appears to support it. If it's true, what does this say about our approach to violent crime and to those who commit those acts? And what steps can we take to address the half-life of tetraethyl lead, and how willing are we to do so? I'm very pleased to welcome Kevin Drum to our show. Hello.
Glad to be here.
Can you start by telling us about the rise in violent crime in the decades following World War II?
Yeah, you know, what we saw in New York City and nationwide was a big rise in violent crime that started in about the mid to late 60s and continued all the way through the late 80s and then peaked right in the early 90s. And then in sort of an underreported story, has been declining ever since. The last 20 years has seen a huge decline in violent crime. In New York City, violent crime is down by something like 70-75%. In Los Angeles, where I live, it's down by about 80%. And in other cities, it's down by 50-60% over the last 20 years.
Well, New York's murder rate for 2012 was the lowest in a half century. On December 26th, the number was 414. But in 1990, it was 2,245 people murdered in New York. This year's murder rate is so low, it's likely that more people will have died from suicide than of murder. On the other hand, Chicago's rate is soaring, and it's a smaller city. It had 471 murders in 2012. So this is not consistent around the country.
No, you'll always find blips here and there. What you find, even in Chicago, if you take a look at the last 20 years, you'll find that the murder rate and the violent crime rate in general is down, but you'll always find spikes in particular years for other reasons.
Since the 1990s, violent crime in New York, as you said, has dropped dramatically. There are all sorts of theories for that, including the broken windows theory. What do you think, I mean, other than the whole business about lead and gasoline, do you think any of those other theories make any sense?
Yeah, I do. I'm not a criminologist, and I don't pretend to know the full scope of the issues of crime, the rise and fall of crime. But yeah, my sense is that, you know, the broken windows policies that the Bill Bratton and Rudy Giuliani introduced in the mid-90s, I think they did make a difference. I think the fact that the crack epidemic burned out in the late 80s, that probably made a difference. The fact that we put more violent offenders in jail for longer periods probably made a difference. Now, you know, what I would say is that I think once you understand the effect of lead on crime, what you'd say is that all those things, although they mattered, they probably mattered less than we thought they did.
Stephen Levitt, the co-author of Freakonomics, caused this huge sensation when he suggested a drop in crime was due to the Roe v. Wade decision.
That's right. He famously wrote an article suggesting that Roe v. Wade caused an increase in abortions, and that meant there were fewer unwanted children. And if you fast forward 15 or 20 years, those fewer unwanted children become fewer unwanted adults who commit fewer crimes. And I don't really have a good sense of how good that theory is. One problem with it is that although it might explain the drop in crime, it doesn't do anything to help you understand the increase in crime during the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And you really, you know, if you want to understand what's going on, you really have to understand why crime went up as well as why crime went down. And lead is a very, very good explanation for both the rise and the fall of crime.
Which leads us to Rick Nevin. Can you tell us about him?
Yeah, Rick Nevin is the guy who really got the ball started on this. He's a researcher. He was working in the 90s. He was working for the Department of Housing and Urban Development, and he was doing some work on cost benefit of removing lead paint from houses. And one thing led to another, and his boss suggested that he should take a look at lead in gasoline as well. And when he did, what he found was that lead emissions from gasoline went up during the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, when we were all driving more cars. And then in the mid-70s, we started taking lead out of gasoline. You know, we all put catalytic converters on our cars, started using unleaded gasoline. It started in the mid-70s. We used less and less leaded gasoline in the 80s and 90s, and it was finally completely banned in 1996. And what he found was that if you look at the curve, you look at lead emissions, they go up, and then they go down. And then if you take that curve and move it out about 20 years, it matches the crime curve. The crime curve goes up and down almost exactly the same as the lead curve. And what it suggests is that all the lead coming out of automobiles was going out into the atmosphere. It created lead dust that was ingested by children. And those children then grew up with more of a propensity for violent crime than they would have had if there hadn't been all that lead. And that's why crime went up about 20 years after the lead emissions in the automobiles, and that's why it went down about 20 years after unleaded gasoline started being introduced in the United States.
Children are more vulnerable to the effects of lead in the atmosphere?
Yes, much more. At high levels, everybody's vulnerable to the effects of lead. At fairly low and moderate levels, the effects are almost all in small children. The real serious effects are in children's age, 1 to 5.
Now, go ahead.
I was just going to say, what we now know about that is that it has permanent effects on brain development in a whole lot of different ways.
What is tetraethyl lead, and why was it added to gas?
Well, tetraethyl lead was invented by General Motors in the 1920s. And it was added because at the time, cars of the time, the engine would ping. It would knock and ping with regular gasoline. And everybody was looking for something to make engines run more smoothly. Well, it turned out that tetraethyl lead did that. If you added that to gasoline, your engine would run more smoothly. And so everybody started adding lead to gasoline. That tetraethyl is the ethyl. Older listeners will remember going to a gas station saying, fill her up with ethyl. That's what that meant. It was tetraethyl lead, the additive that was in gasoline, and it made your car run more smoothly. Modern cars don't need it, and that's one reason why it was fairly easy to take it out in the 70s when the catalytic converters came in, because modern engines don't really need it.
What kind of reaction did Rick Nevin and his paper receive when he published it over a dozen years ago in 2000?
Well, originally, it received almost no reaction at all. And in a way, that's understandable. What he had was a single data set showing sort of an upside-down U. You know, crime goes up and then it goes down. And he had another upside-down U of lead emissions going up and going down. And, you know, the truth is that a single correlation like that is not something that a lot of people are going to take too seriously. You need more evidence. And the paper he wrote did have more evidence. But it took a number of years and a good deal more research at the state level, at the city level, at the country level, and at the medical level as well, to really build up a big body of evidence suggesting that this sort of intriguing hypothesis originally turns out to be more than intriguing. It turns out to have a lot of evidence behind it.
And then there's the research that Jessica Walpole-Reyes did. She was inspired by Nevin's research?
Well, she was actually, oddly enough, she was actually originally inspired by Steve Levitt and his abortion hypothesis. And it got her thinking about crime. And she told me that at the time she was at Harvard. She was a grad student at Harvard. And she was living in old housing off campus that almost certainly had lead paint in it. And she was pregnant. So she was sort of thinking about lead and its effect on small children. Then Levitt came to town and got her thinking about crime, and that got her interested in looking at the effect of lead on crime. So she did something pretty interesting. What Rick Nevin did was just take a look at the whole country. So he took a look at crime rates for the whole country. What Jessica Walpole-Reyes did was she looked at crime rates in each state individually, and it turns out that unleaded gasoline took over gasoline sales at different rates in different states. So, for example, in California, it came in very quickly. We used a lot of unleaded gasoline very quickly, so lead was removed from the atmosphere very quickly. In some states, it was removed much more slowly. And so what you'd expect, if the lead hypothesis is true, is that crime rates would go down faster in states where lead was removed faster. And after running through all the research, it turned out that's exactly what she found. The faster you got the lead out, the faster your crime rate fell.
Now, we also see higher crime rates in certain neighborhoods, various areas, mostly urban areas. Is that in some way related to more lead dust being spread in those areas?
Oh, yeah, no question about it. There are two main sources of lead still left in the environment, and these are the main sources for the last 50 years or so. One of them is gasoline lead, and, of course, the other one is the one that more people know about, and that's lead in lead paint in old houses. And, of course, the old houses with lead paint are very much concentrated in inner cities, in big cities. And lead in soil, lead in the gasoline settles in soil, and you get more of it settling in soil where you've got a bigger concentration of cars. And that also tends to be in the core inner city areas of big cities.
And there was research done in New Orleans regarding lead in the soil.
Right.
Are there safe levels that some people consider safe levels of lead in the soil?
No, there's really no safe level of lead anymore. The EPA has been lowering the safe lead level for years and years. It's lead is measured in the lead in the bloodstream is measured in something called decigrams or deciliters per microgram. And at first the safe level was thought to be 40, and then it was 30, and then it was 20, and then it was 15, and then 10. And today even levels at 5 or below are known to be unsafe. They have even very low levels have an effect on IQ, they have an effect on ADHD, and they have an effect on impulse control, which is what leads to higher rates of violent crime.
My guest is Kevin Drum, who's written an article called Criminal Element, the Hidden Villain Behind Rampant Crime, Lower IQs, Even Rising ADHD. It's in the current issue of Mother Jones, and we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. And we are back with Kevin Drum, whose article, Criminal Element, the Hidden Villain Behind Rampant Crime, Lower IQs, Even Rising ADHD, with a question mark, is in the current issue, the January-February issue of Mother Jones magazine. We have listeners writing in, Kevin, and Jim actually called in to say that the Romans had lead in their paints, and that was the first recorded instance of lead poisoning. But do we have any knowledge about whether it led to more violence?
Well, that we don't know. Obviously, Rome was a very, very violent culture, but I don't think any of us can say if lead was really the cause of that.
And another listener, Tom from Park Slope, says if lead is going down in the environment, why are we seeing an increase in ADHD 16 years after it was banned from gasoline?
Well, there's a couple of things to keep in mind. One is that there are multiple reasons for all of these things. So, I mean, nobody is suggesting that lead is the is the only cause of ADHD. There are other causes, and certainly, one fact is that it's simply diagnosed more than it used to be. So that's part of it. On the lead front, one of the answers is that There's some evidence, and the evidence here is not as strong as it is on violent crime, but there's some recent studies that have been done showing that lead at very, very low levels can cause ADHD. And by low, I mentioned before that the EPA's safe, quote, safe level of lead has decreased from 40 to 20 to 10 to 5. There's some research suggesting that levels as low as 2 or 3 micrograms per deciliter can cause ADHD. And there's, we've gotten rid of a lot of lead in the environment, but there's still that much lead left. There's still lead left at that low a level. And so it's quite possible that those very low levels of lead are still causing problems. Not crime, but what you sort of think of as the precursor to crime, which is just kids who don't pay attention as well.
But not every child exposed to lead has become a threat to commit a violent act. How do you explain why some kids show no such aggressive behavior?
Well, there are some kids who are simply more on the edge than others. You know, I was born in 1958, and so I grew up in the era of lots of cars and lots of lead. I probably ingested plenty of lead as a child, and it probably didn't do me much harm. I mean, I was lucky. It probably, you know, the fact is it probably did reduce my IQ by 2 or 3 points, but it turned out that
I've
wasn't
noticed.
Enough to do.
I'm sorry.
It probably wasn't enough to do me a lot of damage. But, you know, if your IQ is already low, you know, another 2 or 3 or 4 points makes a difference. If you're already living in a neighborhood, hanging around with peers who are more likely to draw you into violent crime, then just a small nudge can make a difference. That's why, you know, that's even without lead, that's why some of us become violent criminals and some of us don't. Lead just makes it a little bit more likely. So if you were right on the edge, it's going to push you over the edge.
Now, you mentioned studies that are being done to learn about the effect that lead has on the brain. Can you speak about the longitudinal study that's being conducted at the University of Cincinnati?
Yeah, researchers at the University of Cincinnati have been following a group of nearly 400 children for nearly 40 years now. They started following them when they were born in about 1981, 82. And what they've done is they've followed them. They have taken measurements of blood lead levels. They have tracked their growth over their entire lifetimes. And so what they have is this group of children where they can tell us exactly what their blood lead levels have been every 6 months for their entire lives. They can tell you how well they did in school, because they've tracked that for their entire lives. They can tell you how often they've been arrested for violent crimes, because they've tracked that for all of these kids. And what they found, you know, after about 30 years of tracking these kids, and, you know, by that time they had enough data to really tell us what was going on, was absolutely clear. The children that had higher blood lead levels had higher arrest rates for violent crimes, and the connection was very, very clear in the data.
So that the higher blood levels of lead would suggest not only higher levels of crime, but also problems with IQ, ADHD, other learning disabilities?
That's right.
Do we know what the actual process is neurologically?
Starting to find out. That's actually something that has been part of more recent research. Some of the researchers at the University of Cincinnati have recently started doing MRI scans of the children who are now adults, of course, of some of the children who are now adults in their study. And they've done MRI scans of the children who had low lead levels and who had high lead levels. And so they're looking at what happened to their brains, what lead did to their brains. And what we found out is that lead, what it does is it mimics calcium. And it turns out that calcium ions are very important for a whole host of developmental issues in the brain. And so lead goes in there, and it sort of mimics calcium, and it keeps the calcium ions out. And without those calcium ions, the brain doesn't develop the way it's supposed to. And that affects two parts of the brain. It affects the gray matter of the brain. You can think of the gray matter as kind of the parts of the brain that do things. You know, there are parts of the brain responsible for verbal reasoning, for analytical reasoning, for emotional control, and so forth. So you've got various pieces of the brain. And it affects those pieces of the brain and reduces emotional control. It reduces impulse control. It increases learning disabilities. And then there's a second part of the brain called white matter, and you can sort of think of that as the network connections between all the different modules in the brain. And it turns out that high lead levels also affect the white matter. So you've got all these modules of the brain that are affected, and the network connections between them are affected. And all of this has a general effect on what are called executive functions. And that's the part of the brain that allows you to control yourself. It regulates your emotions. It regulates your impulse control. It regulates your ability to pay attention to things. It regulates your judgment. And lead reduces all those things. And those are all the kinds of things that are likely to increase your propensity for violence.
My guest is Kevin Drumm. His article, Criminal Element, The Hidden Villain Behind Rampant Crime, Lower IQs, Even Rising ADHD, in the January-February issue of Mother Jones. You describe tetraethyl lead as a zombie that refuses to die. Why?
Oh, that's right. And the reason is, you know, a lot of people ask when they read this, okay, that's interesting as history, but hey, we banned lead in gasoline in 1996. It hasn't been around for 15 years, so why should I care? Well, the reason is that, you know, we spent 40 years spewing lead out into the atmosphere, and all that lead has to go somewhere. And where it went was into the soil. And a lot of that lead is still there in the soil. And the more cars, the higher density of cars you had in a place, the more lead is going to be in your soil. So in a big city like New York, where you've got a lot of cars and a lot of lead emissions, the soil is going to have a lot of lead. Now, a guy named Howard Mielke at Tulane University in New Orleans has done a lot of work on this. And, for example, he's actually got neighborhood-level maps of New Orleans showing soil lead levels in various neighborhoods. And what he's found is that you can actually map it out, and neighborhoods with high soil lead levels also have high crime rates. I mean, it's the same exact correlation you see in pretty much everything else with lead and crime.
Can the lead be extracted from the soil?
Yes, it can. It's expensive, but yes, it can be extracted from soil. It's expensive. It has to be done carefully, but yes, it can be done. And, you know, one of the things that I'd really like, you know, I'm sort of hoping to accomplish with my article is to, you know, it's too much to hope, probably, that everyone's going to suddenly get religion and decide to spend tens of billions of dollars to clean up all the lead. But at the very least, we ought to be mapping lead levels all over the country, especially in the big cities. We should be mapping areas, especially playgrounds, schools, places like that where kids congregate. We should be at least mapping lead levels, finding out which neighborhoods, which areas have the highest level of lead in their soil. And those are the ones that we should start targeting to clean up.
Have studies been done in other countries as well?
Yeah, Rick Nevin, the guy we were talking about earlier, you know, his original paper was about crime in the United States. And then a few years later, he did another paper looking at crime rates in other countries. Now, the interesting thing about that is that, you know, other countries banned lead and gasoline at different times. So their crime rates should be different from ours in the United States. And what he found was that countries that banned lead, every single time, every single country that he looked at, crime started to go down about 20 years later. I mean, as those kids grew up without lead, 20 years later as adults, they were committing fewer crimes. He found that in Britain. He found it in Finland. He found it in Australia. He found it in New Zealand, in Canada, all over the world. And he predicts that there are areas, other areas of the world, like South America and Eastern Europe, where they've only banned lead recently in gasoline. He predicts that in another 5, 10, 15 years, all those areas are going to start seeing reduced crime as well.
So I'm convinced. And then in your article, you write, none of the criminology experts I contacted showed any interest in the lead hypothesis at all.
It's a big frustration. And if you, you know, when I talk to Rick Nevin and Jessica Reyes and Howard Mielke, all, I mean, the guys who are doing the lead research, it's a big frustration for them that, you know, 10 years ago it was sort of excusable. You had just this one paper showing one correlation, and maybe you didn't take it seriously. But that's just not the case anymore. There's a ton of evidence. And, you know, I would really, really like to see the criminology community start to engage with this. And, you know, do one of two things. Either do the research to show that the hypothesis is wrong, and, you know, it might be. No matter how much data you've got, you still might be wrong. But either show that it's wrong, or else show that it's right and actually take it seriously and sort of integrate that into what we think about how we fight crime.
Okay, Kevin. So let's say they start doing blood tests and they discover that there are higher levels of lead in the blood of people who perpetrate crimes. Then where do we go from there?
Well, the place to go from there is you'd like to clean it up. There's, you know, sadly,
I mean, can you extract it from the blood of these people?
There is nothing much we can do for adults who were poisoned as children. There's very little in
the way
of
chelation
you can do. It's basically too late. The problem is that the brain development has already been stunted. So even if you lead doesn't actually stay in blood for a long time. So a lot of these people who were exposed to lead as children, if you look at their blood lead levels today, it'll be very low. I mean, the lead is gone, but it affected their brains when they were kids, and that brain development isn't going to change.
So if we accept this theory, then we just have to say, okay, we'll wait it out, and in another 20 or 30 years when lead levels have continued to diminish in the environment, we'll start seeing even lower levels of violent crime. Is that it?
Well, that would be nice, except the problem is that we're not doing anything further to clean up lead. You know, what happened was a little bit of an accident. You know, we took lead out of gasoline largely because of catalytic converters. We wanted to clean up smog, so we put catalytic converters on our cars, and catalytic converters require unleaded gasoline.
And we took lead out of our paint?
And paint. Lead was taken out of paint as well. So, I mean, that was done. It was mostly, partly an accident and partly because of the known effects of lead on IQ. Nobody, back when this happened, nobody knew about the connection with crime. Now, there's still lead around. There's still lead in paint that's left, and there is still lead in the soil. Now, what we should be doing is cleaning up all that remaining lead. And if we do that, then yes, 20 years from now, we'd see huge benefits. We'd see even more of a decline in crime than we've already seen so far. But it will only happen if we keep cleaning up lead.
And in New York, there's still lead solder in some of our pipes, so we still have to be aware of that.
That's right. There are smaller amounts of lead in various places. There's private airplanes that use lead. There's a few other places.
Kevin Drum, the article Criminal Element, the Hidden Villain Behind Rampant Crime, Lower IQs, Even Rising ADHD, in the current issue of Mother Jones Magazine. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on.